Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of our Pro Football Weekly TV podcast. I'm Hub Arkish, and I'm joined by my partners, longtime NFL head coach Dave Wannstedt and Hall of Famer Dan Hampton. And guys, free agency took off with a bang Monday, but before we get to all the huge deals made this week, eight top players had franchise tags hung on them, giving their 23 teams leverage to keep them. They include the Ravens defensive tackle Justin Matabuike, Panthers edge rusher and linebacker Brian Burns, Bears cornerback Jalen Johnson, Bengals wide receiver T. Higgins, the Colts wide receiver Michael Pittman, Jaguars edge rusher Josh Allen, the Chiefs cornerback Ladarius Sneed, and the Bucks safety Antoine Winfield Jr. Those are your eight franchise tags. And you've already got Matabuike re-signed with the Ravens, Pittman with the Colts, Johnson with the Bears. Brian Burns, I should say, has been traded to the Giants. And T. Higgins has asked the Bengals for a trade while Allen, Sneed, and Winfield continue to negotiate with various teams. All eight of these players received the exclusive franchise tag, which means they couldn't sign with a new team this season. There is a non-exclusive franchise tag, which allows players to sign with another team. But if they do, their new team has to give their last team two first-round draft choices, which almost never happens. And Dave, we're going to start with you and then go on to Dan. You know, there are many free agents this year that you would give up. Are there any, I should say, free agents this year that you would give up two first-round picks for and then pay a $100 million contract, $100 million plus, I should say? That's why it so rarely occurs, and it leaves teams in salary cap hell when they do it. So I'm just curious, would you ever consider, you know, picking up somebody on that price tag?
No, I mean, that would set you back, unless it was a quarterback, you know, an Aaron Rodgers in his prime or Patrick Mahomes right now, then I think you'd consider it. You know, I traded a one to New Orleans with Mike Ditka for Ricky Williams, and but we absorbed his contract, and he had 3 years left on it. He had signed that really ridiculously long 8-year contract out of college for a bunch of different incentives and clauses, and he wasn't making much money. So we took the contract and we gave up the first round pick, and we were happy with it. So, but some of these things I obviously would not. I just think it's too steep a price to pay. And, you know, it's too much of a crapshoot. I mean, it's bad enough you're taking a chance on one guy. Now, all of a sudden, you're going to take a chance on two. You know, that's you can do a lot with two number one picks.
You know, Dan, there's going to be discussion about this in a couple of weeks at the owners' meetings because, you know, teams want to keep it this way. Players are not happy. You're supposed to be able to be a free agent after four seasons. But with these franchise tags, teams can basically control you for 5 years. And I know a lot of players, more and more players are complaining about it. And, you know, it's justifiable because the reality is with that franchise tag, you can lock a guy in even though he is supposed to be free.
Guys, and I'm going to take a little different tact here. And I'm looking at our very own Chicago Bears. You're looking up the street at Justin Jefferson, who is in that situation. And the Bears, by virtue of the trade last year, they have two first-round picks. The number nine pick this year. Are you, other than Marvin Harrison, are you certain that you have an elite difference maker as a wide receiver? Why wouldn't the Bears basically shove all the chips into the middle of the table and say, yes, we're going to go get Justin Jefferson and give up the nine pick this year, whatever it is next year, to satisfy that side of it, and you would pair him with Caleb Williams and DJ Moore. It could be, you know, an elite setup that you could only dream about. And yet, in a kind of a big picture way, it's not only doable, it's almost like it makes perfect sense. Think about this. A lot of the players that they have on defense, Montez Sweat, they're all signed up for 4 years. So you are basically saying our four-year window to try and make another run at a Super Bowl starts right now. And if you do make that trade, then you are putting yourself automatically in, a top six or eight position as far as a roster that is ready and equipped to win right now. So, well, Ryan Poles, they signed DeAndre Swift as the feature back. But if you go and you get Justin Jefferson, you talk about, you know, setting the bar pretty high. That would be pretty simple.
Well, guys, yeah, I just personally think it's a ridiculous price to pay. I can't imagine it's. I'm with David on what he said. I suppose if Patrick Mahomes was available, yeah, I'd consider giving him a contract and giving up what I have to. There may be one or two other players, but it almost never happens, and it's probably not going to happen in the future. And I think that rule is going to get changed, if not this year, certainly within the next year or two, because the players, they're going to want something in return to give them a quicker road to free agency, if you will. You know, guys, as I look at this year's group of free agents, I have to say, I think the most talent is available on the defensive line at end and tackle. And Dan, as you look at this year's class, which position group or groups do you see as the most talented, both in depth and with the most high-end players?
Christian Wilkins going to Las Vegas and being paired with Max Crosby, that in my mind is, you know, a pretty salty arrangement. You know, back when we were pretty good, we not only had two, we had three exceptional defensive linemen. And if you can start putting these guys side by side, it eliminates a lot of the offense's ability to double and you know, isolate. So you think about that. Brian Burns, think about this. I think the Rams offered a couple of ones for him back a little ways, and yet Carolina botched it and sends him to the Giants, and they only get a 2 and a 5 for him. But he truly is exceptional as far as a difference maker. And, of course, you know, he's a defensive end. But, you know, I saw Chris Jones decides to accept the deal in Kansas City. So, I mean, if you look at it, there was a handful of truly elite down linemen. And, you know, from my perspective, a lot of teams had great – value placed on them and made a move to go ahead and secure.
Dave, as you've gotten ready to get free agency kicked off, which position groups have really jumped out at you? Where do you think the most talent is this year?
Well, the most talent, I would agree with you. I think the edge rushers, the defensive linemen, like Camp said, and, you know, from a coach's perspective, I'll give a couple of examples, probably just to reinforce what Hamp said. When Trace Armstrong had 14 sacks at defensive end for me at the Dolphins, and Jason Taylor had 13 sacks, it might have been 14 at the other end, it was Tim Bowens was the defensive tackle. Now, he didn't have many sacks, but, you know, he prevented that quarterback from stepping up. He flushed the quarterback enough that made the ends, their pass rush from the outside a lot easier. A lot like, you know, Hamp did and Steve McMichael did to help Richard Dent a little bit. So I'm going to say, you know, the defensive line, you know, people got to understand how Wilkins is going to help Crosby. And Hamp talked about Brian Burns, you know, and I'll say this. Before we drafted Emmitt Smith, you know, we weren't sure about his speed. Jimmy set me up to time him. You know, wasn't fast enough? Was he big enough? You know, all that stuff. And the one thing that stuck with us is that the guy was a four-year starter at Florida in the SEC, and he played at a high level every year. And when you look at Brian Burns at Carolina, this guy in 5 years, I was looking at it again this morning, in 5 years, the guy averaged 9 sacks a year. And his lowest year was his rookie year. This guy averaged 50 tackles a year. And his lowest year was his rookie year. So that's what's, and he's 25 years old. I mean, that's what's exciting about a guy like that. And I'm going to move to the other side, but I like him. Jalen Johnson with the Bears. And let's talk about this for a minute, because is he a heck of a football player? Yes, he is. Is he a really good player? Yes, he is. But as I look at this free agency and the numbers, and all of a sudden he's the seventh highest paid defensive back in the league, and he's got 5 interceptions and 4 of them were this year in a contract year. I'm a fan of the guys. Let me say that first. But that makes me a little nervous when you start putting them in the class of Ramsey and some of these top corners. You know, is he a really good corner? No question. No question. Is he a top 7 corner in the NFL? We got to wait and see, in my opinion.
You know, I had never really thought about it, Dan, until you said it a few minutes ago. But your 85 Bears defensive line, now that Ming finally has gotten what he deserves, 3 of your 4 starters were Hall of Famers. If that's not the best defensive line of all time, I'm not sure, you know, how there could be a better one. We'll have to do a little homework on that and see if anybody has had that much talent on a defensive line. But Dan, I'm going to throw it back to you now and ask you, you know, I've been doing a lot of the picking comments, if you will. What's the most interesting story to you right now in this year's free agency class? The biggest story or the most interesting story or maybe the best one to talk about?
Well, before we got kicked off here today, Dave Wannstedt, you brought up the running backs. And, you know, for the last 3, 5, 8 years, it's almost like the running back has been, you know, relegated to a lesser status than what it was 20 years ago, where everybody wanted a feature back, blah, blah, blah. Well, all of a sudden, you know, how all of these backs have like musical chairs. They have, you know, changing addresses. And you know, obviously the one that everybody is talking about is the Philadelphia Eagles, obviously with the new offensive coordinator, Kellen Moore, who was in Dallas and then went to the Chargers and now he's in Philly, going out and signing Saquon Barkley. And it's not the crazy money that maybe a lot of backs would have commanded 3, 5, 7 years ago, but Barkley's on a 3-year, $37 million deal. It's a lot of money, yes. But it's not a, you know, Christian McCaffrey 20 mil plus a year. But with Barkley going to Philadelphia, I think that's going to change an awful lot about how Jalen Hurts and that offensive line, yeah, they lost Kelce at the center, but they still got the remnants of what a lot of people think is the best offensive line in football. If Barkley stays healthy, you could see him having one of those years like a Eric Dickerson 2,000-yard type of season because of how diverse that offense could become, you know, with the RPOs and all the things they do on offense. And not only that, but, you know, Tony Pollard going to Tennessee, which you'd think, okay, you know, that's crazy thinking about him going in and supplanting Derrick Henry. But now you take Derrick Henry, who still was extremely effective last year, 4.2 yard per average carry, one of the top in the NFL, now going and you put him in tandem with Lamar Jackson. That is going to be unbelievable. Both, you know, the Jalen Hurts, Saquon matchup, and then of course Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson. And the thing is that offense with Lamar, you can't attack it. You basically have to play like almost like a soft, you know, string out defense where you're trying to close off inside gaps, take away the cutback, and force Lamar, the running game, try to keep from getting gashed and keeping people strung out. Well, if there's ever been a better one step, one cut runner than Derrick Henry, show him to me. Because I can just see, you know, as a defense, you're trying to string that thing out and Henry taking it back against the grain. I got to tell you, a lot of these running backs, Josh Jacobs going to Green Bay, and we here in Chicago had such great respect for Aaron Jones. And it's almost like Aaron Jones lived to wreck the Chicago Bears. And he did practically every time we lined up and played against him. But now you got Josh Jacobs, who was a more powerful, potent, you know, cutback runner. I got to tell you, a lot of these backs changing addresses, and yet I think it, the expectations are going to be extremely high. And again, everybody's been kind of going in the direction of, you know, the controlled chaos offense where you're a lot of checkdowns and this and that. I can see the actual running games becoming more preeminent and more prominent this season in the NFL with the, all these still great running backs, but now with, you know, more of a, what would you call it, an ideal a setup with the offensive play calling, offensive lines, the structure, all those different things. It's going to be fascinating.
You know, Dave, there is absolutely no doubt in my mind that the running game is every bit as important as it's always been in professional football, and running backs are important. But we saw the last couple of years the teams have stopped paying them. Now, even in this free agency with these three or four bigger deals that have been done, it's not the kind of money that the edge rushers are getting, or even that the offensive tackles, even the offensive guards in this draft so far are getting paid more than the running backs. And I think maybe part of the reason is because they're not that hard to find anymore. I mean, you know, there are at least 10 to a dozen running backs in the NFL right now, any one of whom on a given, you know, weekend could be the best back in the league. And I don't think it's that they're, you know, devaluating running backs anymore so much as there's just an awful lot of good ones out there.
Yeah, I don't know, Rob. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I don't think any of them have gotten the big, big money like in the past. And so as a result, they're signing shorter contracts, you know, one-year deals, two-year deals. They're signing the franchise tag, which makes them become eligible a little bit quicker. So, you know, and then these, you know, when a guy goes in for an interview, I've said this before, there's not a head coach going in for an interview with an owner that's going to sit up there and talk about running the ball 35 times a game and running for 180 yards a game, and an owner's going to get impressed. So they're going to go in and they're going to talk about throwing the ball and scoring points. And, you know, that doesn't include the running back a lot, at least in the modern era, and these coaches and owners. So I think it's a combination of that. It's tough to go in and get a job and say, boy, you're going to throw the ball 45 times a game and score 35 points. And then a running back comes up and you go in and knock on the owner's door and say, hey, I need $20 million to sign this back. And he's going to say, for what? You never talked about running the ball when I interviewed you. So I think it's a little bit of that. And, you know, the shorter contracts because of that. So I would say those two things have affected the running back market. The thing that got me, you know, Hamp jumped in on my running back topic there a little, Hamp. But the thing that got me was the quarterbacks. How about the quarterbacks being signed? I mean, you know, we expected, obviously, Kirk Cousins. But, you know, Sam Darnold, Brissett, you know, Gardner Minshew. I mean, these guys are getting gobbled up as fast as any position. They're not getting the money. No one's, because no one's talking about them. They're not getting Brian Burns money or any of these other big guys, Wilkins money. But they are signing contracts and being recruited as fast and as hard as anybody. And most of these guys were backups. And I think, you know, Jameis Winston just signed today. And, you know, he's going to compete with Deshaun Watson at Cleveland. So you're seeing a lot of backup signing contracts, and the people are doing it in a hurry. And I don't know what you think, Hub, but why is Justin Fields, who was not a backup, who was a starter, why is he still standing there, Hub?
Well, I'm the wrong one to ask because I have been concerned about Justin's future as an NFL starting quarterback for a while now. I think he's a great young man. I think he's got the leadership ability, he's got the smarts, and he's certainly got the athletic talent. But I don't think he's an NFL passer. And I think somebody is going to trade for him and give him a shot. But I think the story in Chicago all year has been, oh, you know, it was Flus's choice and it was fault and it was Gesicki's fault and they didn't coach him right. I don't think that was the problem at all. I think the kid just is not, at least yet, an NFL passer. And I'm not sure if I've seen enough that he's going to be. And what's really interesting now is that, you know, as recently as a week ago, there were a lot of pretty smart people that I talked to thinking the Bears might still get a number one pick for him. They gave up two number ones, you know, the one that they used to take him and the one that they gave up to trade to be able to take him. And now I'm not sure they're going to get a number two. I think that, you know, they may end up either keeping him or trading him for a fourth round pick and a fifth round pick. It just doesn't seem like there's a market for him right now. And you know, I don't know, Dave. I don't think there's a team out there that is comfortable giving up too much for a guy who is a bit of a risk at this point with the Bears quitting on him. I mean, you know, if the Bears don't trade that number one overall pick, if they use it on Caleb Williams or on somebody else, what does that tell you, you know, what they thought about Justin Fields when you realize what they gave up by not trading that pick? And so if that's how the Bears feel, I got to believe all these other teams looking at it are saying, you know, they got to know something. So it's going to be really interesting to see where Fields does end up, you know, landing, and if he does become a good starter in the NFL. And I wouldn't write him off. He's got that kind of athletic ability, but he's still got a lot left to learn. I'll tell you, though, Dave, you brought it up. The other thing that has struck me the most about this free agency is the Kirk Cousins contract. Not that he was the first quarterback signed or not that he ended up with the Falcons. $180 million with $100 million guaranteed for 4 years. He's going to have his 26th birthday in August. He's going to be 40 when this contract expires. And he's coming off, he tore his Achilles week 8. You don't even know at what point this season he's going to be ready to play. I'm not sure, you know, what you do there. But I do know that we don't know what his health is right now. I don't know, Dave. I think that's one of the craziest contracts I've ever seen.
You mentioned the Achilles. Dan Marino, and I think I said this last week, he got out of football because his legs, his ruptured Achilles and his knees, it wasn't his arm. So it can take a toll on a quarterback. Everybody says, well, Cousins doesn't run anyway. No. You need your legs to be able to throw accurately and with velocity. Back to a point that Hamp brought up, Chris Jones, who just jumped ahead, I believe, maybe $500,000 ahead of Aaron Donald, who was the highest paid defensive tackle in the league, deservingly so. You know, they're close, but I think Chris got a little bit more money now. And you said it, Hub. You sounded like Jimmy Johnson. Why did they give him that much money? And Jimmy used to always say, guys, the team that they're playing for knows more about him than we do. I don't care how much research we do, who you guys talk to, what reports we get. They are living with this guy for a year, 7 days a week, X amount of hours a day. And so, you know, some people have come up to me and said, oh boy, Chris Jones, how can they give him that money? Well, it's Kansas City. He was with them. Give Andy Reid and those guys credit. They know more about that player than someone else. Your point, Hub, with Kirk Cousins, you know, if Minnesota didn't, I don't know how big of an offer the Vikings gave, but if they did not give a big offer and Atlanta jumped up and did that, I would be concerned.
You know, guys, real quick, and I know this sounds, I don't want to say like, you know, spoiling, you know, the milk, but it is almost incomprehensible that Kevin O'Connell, the head coach of the Minnesota Vikings, and having to play with Joshua Dobbs and the fifth round pick from BYU, and those are, as you just stated, Coach, those guys, they know Kirk Cousins better than anyone. They know the stature of his fitness. Is healing process on track? Is it and yet for Atlanta to come out of, you know, left field and throw $180 million at Kirk Cousins? Now you can say, okay, we'll talk about a dream scenario. He's got three number one draft picks on the offensive line. You got a ultra talented group around him with Kyle Pitts, Drake London, and Bijan Robinson, all first round draft picks. At some point, you got to say, okay, they're swinging for the fences. This is a moonshot. But to have that type of contract offered to an injured Kirk Cousins And yet no one is even lifting a finger to try to sign Justin Fields, who has started how many games in the NFL, 40 something games in the NFL? That tells you an awful lot. And that they'd rather throw, you know, gazillions at an injured 36-year-old quarterback rather than try to take a project. Maybe it's because I don't know if we talked about it in the last week or two, but Justin Fields in the fourth quarter, his statistics are enough to drive somebody out of the NFL. So maybe that is the overarching reason why a lot of people are just, you know, steering clear of him. But we saw over the last couple of years in Chicago, you know, flashes, bursts of him doing some exceptional things. It's just unbelievable that nobody's willing to take a flyer on him. And right now, you've got to think somebody wants to.
All right, guys, I'm going to come to both of you on this next one, because I think it's particularly interesting from two different windows, if you will. Dave, I'll start with you. I really think you get to, you know, we agreed, I think all of us, that edge rushers and defensive linemen may be the most talented group in free agency. To me, the next most talented group is the offensive linemen. You know, there's a lot of guards getting signed. There's some really good offensive tackles that are available. And there's even a couple centers that are going to get paid big money. And I just wonder, Dan, I'll come to you first, because you played the position for 12 years at a Hall of Fame level. And I got to believe that you spent most of your time evaluating the offensive linemen you were going to play against, who were going to try and block you. You know, tell us what you look for in evaluating offensive line talent. You know, what is it that takes the best ones and makes them special?
Well, to me, and the game has changed a little bit. Obviously, with the platooning of defensive linemen, the offensive line, they're pretty much in there for the full 70 plays, whatever. I look for balance, you know, in pass protection, and power as far as trying to move people at the point of attack. And you brought up the fact that the offensive line had a little bit of a run, especially on the interior positions. Jonah Jackson signed with the Rams for $51 million, and Kevin Dotson signed for $48 million. That's $100 million that you're going to commit to your two offensive guards. The Rams now, you know, with a lot of high-value, big marquee names, you know, the quarterback, receivers, you know, Aaron Donald, they're committing $100 million to their two offensive guards. And what that tells me is we saw in the NFC Championship game, when it got down to the end of the game, that Jared Goff was getting pressure. And I think he was 0 for 6 third down in the third and fourth quarter. And that's ultimately what created the situation where the 49ers were able to come back. Well, why was he pressured? Well, obviously, the elite, you know, blitzing schemes are, you know, a part of it. But just getting, you know, wore out by the pass rush up the middle, forcing quarterbacks off their mark, off their spot, having to try to improvise, you know, it looks to me like, knowing that Matt Stafford is at that point in his career, they are trying to be proactive in saying, you know what, we're going to do what we have to do to make sure we protect him up the middle. And a lot of quarterbacks will tell you, you know, the guy's coming around the back door two times a game, three times a game when they cleanly beat an offensive tackle. Okay, that's one thing. But to have a quarterback get assaulted from the front with that collapsing of the pocket, play after play after play, obviously, that is what, you know, you can read between the lines. Matt Stafford said, I can't take this. I'm at the point in my career, you know, I will not be the same player. That's why they went out and they signed these guards to these, you know, huge contracts. $100 million for offensive guards over the next 3-4 years. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that. What about you, Coach?
No, I mean, it's a lot, you know, and yeah, I and you can see with the coaching, was talking to Tony Wise today, and he was on the phone with Chris Foerster, the offensive line coach of the 49ers. And Chris was on my staff at Miami. And, you know, I like to watch these guys for two reasons. To see where they're going, and has a lot to do with the scheme. You're going to see the bigger, heavy guys doing the zone stuff, the more athletic guys going to teams that want to pull, like the Kelseys and those guys. But the one position that I become as important as maybe the offensive coordinator or defensive coordinator is that offensive line coach. I mean, this is the one position. I think what's happened is, you know, in high school, you can't hit. In college, you can't hit. No one's running the ball. Everyone's three-step and throwing. And when these guys get to the NFL, they are the most underdeveloped position on the football field. Underdeveloped. And there's no camp you can go do for offensive line because you don't wear pads and you can't hit. The only way you get better at offensive line is if you are coming off the ball and hitting people and keeping your balance, like you said, Hamp, and doing all those things. So I kind of look at this offensive line thing and say, you know, there's a guy there that's a good player. And from a selfishness standpoint with a coach, I'm not going to have to sleep with this guy to get him to block somebody. You know, he is blocking people. We can see him. Let's sign this kid. He's going to come in and play for you. Let's not take a chance whether this guy will develop or won't develop. So, I see that. That's never been in the case because we've always been. We'll draft up. The trend was, when we were at Dallas, two of our starting offensive linemen were defensive linemen. We moved them over and just said, give them to Tony in the offseason. He'll develop them. You know, we were going out with pads then and doing all that stuff. Not anymore.
Well, guys, one more. We're running out of time, I'm afraid. But one more question, which is actually probably the hardest, but also the most fun. And I'm sure that some of our audience at least wants to know what we think. If you were a GM and you could only sign one guy from this free agent class, as you've looked at him now, who do you think is going to prove to be the most valuable player signed in this free agent class? Dave, I'll let you go first.
Well, we had this 4 weeks ago, and you asked me to pick a player, and I'm going to stick with him. I said Brian Burns. And my mind has not changed on this guy. I'm not seeing anything different now than I did at the beginning of the show or I did 3 weeks ago. He's a closer. You've got to sign a closer. By closer, I mean the game's on the line. If you got the lead, you need a defensive guy that can put an end to it. If you're behind, you need a closer, a quarterback, receiver, somebody that can make a play and put an end to it. I would go with Brian Burns.
You know, Dave, I got to tell you, I couldn't agree with you more. It's amazing to me, as highly as the people that I've been talking to think of this young man, that the Giants got him as inexpensively as they did is stunning. I mean, you're talking about maybe the best edge rusher in football over the next couple of years, and you give up a second-round pick and a fifth-round pick next year. That's a pretty good deal. Hamp, who's your guy for this year?
Okay, well, and it's kind of hard to pick just one, but something about the fact that Saquon Barkley, I'm going to say Barkley being, you know, paired with Jalen Hurts and that offense with Kellen Moore, I think that is beyond interesting. It's going to be fascinating to watch. What they're able to do with him involved with that offense, because he's great at pass pro. He's great catching the ball out of the backfield. I think he's going to be one of the great stories of the 2024 season. But again, when I came off the top, I said Max Crosby is my favorite defensive lineman in football because he plays with reckless. Abandoned and he is violent, and it'll be fun to watch him now that he has somebody inside Christian Wilkins, who obviously has been getting better and better and better in Miami on the AstroTurf in Las Vegas. That's gonna That's going to create an awful lot of interesting possibilities. So I'm going to go with two. I'm going to go with Saquon and then Christian Wilkins, defensive tackle in Vegas.
Well, guys, I'm going to go. I think we're all sticking close to the edge rushers of the defensive line. And I've got another one. Jonathan Greenard of the Houston Texans, I think, may have been almost as important to that team as C.J. Stroud was, and he is now a Minnesota Vikings. And the Vikings had Danielle Hunter, who is a, you know, $70, $80 million pass-rushing free agent, and they decided to let that guy go to go get Greenard. Now, I'm not saying Danielle Hunter isn't going to be great too, but clearly the Vikings think that they see something. He's only 27 years old. His best years could still be in front of him, so that's the young man that I'm going to predict is going to have at least a couple of great seasons going forward for the Minnesota Vikings. Well, we are out of time for this week, guys. We'll be back again next week. And I can tell you, we're going to start with getting into the draft a little bit more, start breaking down some of those players as well as continuing to cover free agency. And we will start to prepare for the owners' meetings, which are going to be the week after as well. But right now, we hope everybody has a great rest of the week and weekend. Enjoy the ongoing free agency madness, and we will talk to you all again next week.